Welcome to Directly Speaking, a direct-to-consumer marketer's podcast. Our podcast features marketing leaders in the direct-to-consumer and e-commerce space. We get to learn a bit about their brands and the stories behind them, compare notes on trends and challenges in the industry, learn how they approach their marketing journey, and hopefully a little bit about them personally. I'm your host, Marcus Lancaster, head of e-commerce and retail strategy at Quad. I'm excited about today's guest, Nikita Gay, global beauty and wellness brand leader. Nikita is a cultural architect with a 20-year track record of transforming brand storytelling into business-defining growth. Having spent the last decade dominating the global beauty sector, Nikita has served as a strategic powerhouse for industry titans, including Revlon and L'Oreal. As an expert in social media and influencer marketing, she specializes in the social-first framework, engineering viral campaigns that don't just trend, but command the cultural conversation. Her visionary work has been featured in the world's leading style and business publications, and her expertise lies in the ability to bridge the gap between legacy brand equity and modern digital influence, making the world's most iconic brands unmissable in a crowded marketplace. Nikita is a sought-after industry speaker and executive leader, and she's dedicated to the evolution of marketing leadership, where data-driven business results meet the raw power of culture. Nikita, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much.
I'm so glad to have you on. Thank you for making the time. What a mouthful your biography is. You've had a great track record. Why don't we start off by you just like walk our audience through a little bit about who you are and how you came to be here today.
Who I am, I think probably most importantly, I'm a mom. So I have a 7-year-old son. But outside of that, career-wise, I started my career at Discovery Channel, actually, so working in their international division and working in kind of traditional digital marketing. So that allowed me to kind of have like a global lens kind of early on in my career. But I kind of always had the itch to come to New York. So I left Discovery and I started working in a Choice Hotel, still in the DMV area. So I'm originally from Maryland. But that's where I got my start in social. So I was still in traditional marketing, but I was kind of like the only person that kind of recognized that social was something important to marketing, kind of raised my hand and said, hey, I'd love to start to build these platforms for us. And it was just kind of like continued on from there. So I made my way to New York and kind of moved through a few different industries, publishing, and I worked on the agency side for a bit and found my way into beauty, which I love beauty. I love, you know, pop culture. So they kind of all kind of mix together. And so that's how I landed at L'Oreal and focused on building digital content for them and social content and influencer. And I worked on L'Oreal Paris, which is the flagship brand. So that's where I kind of got my start and my legs in beauty and have been doing that ever since, you know, across brands like smaller brands like New Face on the retail side with Sally Beauty and most recently with Revlon. So I think beauty moves at the speed of culture. Sometimes beauty is the culture. So, you know, I love working in this kind of fast paced environment where, you know, the social's changing and the consumer is changing and the creator ecosystem is changing. So, you know, I've been in social for, you know, 15 years at this point, and it's not boring to me because it just is constantly evolving, constantly changing, keeping us on our toes, especially in beauty. So it's a fun space to be in.
You started in traditional marketing and, you know, and obviously with a little bit of an entertainment background.
Yeah.
How did those different chapters teach you about storytelling and how does that show up in how you approach your brand today?
Yeah, I think storytelling to me is like storytelling is life. And that's how you really connect with people. I think the best advertising, you know, is more than just spitting out claims and telling you what a new product is. It's really narrating an experience and really to evoke an emotion out of someone to then get them to take action. You know, Nike has actually always been my North Star for you know, advertising for a long time just because they were master storytellers. And so that's what has really kind of influenced me in my career.
What an excellent brand to be influenced by. I totally agree. Nike's been an icon. Mm-hmm. When you look back, what's the through line through your career from Choice Hotels to Revlon to beauty that, you know, is there a common thread in terms of how you approach those brands?
I think for me, everything is I'm really consumer centric. So I'm always thinking about what consumers want. And I've always, you know, I've stayed in that social space. So it's always been about looking at what's happening in social and how consumers are behaving and leveraging social. And really kind of my approach is how are we building the brand around what consumer behavior and what they're looking for. So that's kind of been what's been steady for me through my career.
Got it. There's been an evolution of social. You know, I think probably when you entered, it was much more awareness than today, where it's, you know, full funnel engine.
Yeah.
How have you watched that change, and what's been interesting to you to watch during that time?
It's fascinating. You know, like I mentioned, I got my start in social at Choice Hotels, and it was really like, let's start a Twitter page and a profile and a little bio, and we'll post a picture here and, you know, a couple things there. Till now, it's like, now there's so many different platforms, and social's 24/7, right? So it's, there's so much content that has to be posted and created all the time. The strategy can't live in a silo. It must be integrated in order to truly be effective. And you really have not just like audiences and just consumers, you have communities that are being really built around brands and with.
That's a great point. I love that. Keep going.
And so, you know, the community piece, you're making such deeper connections with consumers. And so that's where social is going beyond just upper funnel to really pulling you all the way through the funnel with these deep communities. And that's where it's tying more to like LTV, right? And like, you know, just it's more than just these upper funnel metrics. So I think, you know, social has just really, it's a whole ecosystem in itself. And it used to be an afterthought. And now I think when you think of the consumer journey, it's where discovery happens. It's also where, you know, it can insert insight trial, and also where through commerce now you can even shop it. So it's a full funnel experience in itself. It's a full funnel experience within the marketing side of things. And now there's so many different platforms. TikTok is literally driving culture. It's so interesting. It's a platform that you have to activate on, but it's also a platform that is engaging and really influencing how an entire generation is living their life. So it's just changed tremendously. And that's like the good side of it. I think the other thing that's changed a lot about social over time is the opposite side of it, right? There's also a really ugly side to social, and that affects brands and marketers as well. And so now you have to be trained as a marketing social strategist on crises. You always have to be prepared for, you know, anticipating what negativity might happen with certain content that you post. And so being on the front lines of the negative side of social can be a bit brutal. So just seeing how it's kind of gone from just kind of basic and kind of a fun upper funnel awareness, you know, channels to have in your ecosystem to being completely, you know, thinking of beauty, it is a must have. It's critical for cultural resonance. It's full funnel play. And it also can serve as a place where crises can happen and need to be solved. So it plays a much, much, it plays a huge role in a brand's success, frankly, this day and age.
Given that the myriad of ways that it impacts a brand, you know, revenue, awareness, et cetera.
Yeah.
Measuring its performance is probably a lot harder. How do you approach that?
Oh man, you know, it is harder because again, right now a lot of marketing budgets are tight and marketers are being challenged, CMOs are being challenged to show how every single dollar is affecting the bottom line. So my approach is thinking about social as it relates to the business. So when I build social strategies, the North Star for social actually has to ladder up to an overarching business strategy. But that being said, I'm also really it's important to me to also make sure that marketers don't and leaders at large don't lose how critically important upper funnel awareness is for social. Because if you are not relevant, forget the bottom of the funnel. No one's going to shop if they don't know who you are, right? So they're both equally important. But I think to show the business impact, a lot of what I do is correlate the activity that's happening in social with bottom line activity, and also ensuring that every single tactic that we activate in social has an actual KPI attached to it, so we can show that business impact. And that requires us to really be working in an integrated way, right? So I'm working with the e-commerce teams, I'm working with the brand marketing teams. Like if social is working in a silo, that's also the easiest way to show that it's not actually delivering business results, because you don't know what the business needs are. So a fully integrated approach is also how I approach social.
Got it. So when you say an integrated approach, that means that really its performance has to be measured from an incrementality perspective, not just the performance of it by itself. It's really how it impacts the overall business.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we look at it separately, right? Because as social folks, like we understand the importance of engagements and your social and the health of your social channels. But at the end of the day, it is a part of what we talked about, that full funnel. So if we're not looking at it in terms of how it's affecting the business as a whole, then we can't justify what we're doing, right? We can't say the work that we're doing is actually impacting the business. And that's a trap I think a lot of old school or like social marketers fall into, is that, you know, it's like, well, we're just, you know, it's important that we create the vibe and the, and, you know, some of the kind of upper funnel things. But at the end of the day, you have to remember you're working for an organization, you're working for a brand, and you're helping that brand sell whatever product, service it might be. So you have to be thinking about how social is impacting that.
Excellent. So what do brands still misunderstand about social first strategies?
I think right now, I think what I'm seeing is happening a lot with leadership is that they don't understand that it's multifaceted, right? So it's not just, okay, we need a TikTok shop and we need social to drive a TikTok shop. Like it really has to be full storytelling. You have to understand who your consumer is, where they're playing, and what matters to them. And you have to create content native to the platform that's going to resonate with them. Every single post is not going to lead to a sale, but our overall collective efforts do need to lead to sales. So I think just understanding how it all kind of works as a whole is what's really challenging for a lot of brands and leadership.
I love that you brought the through line of storytelling back into that, because it does emphasize the importance of storytelling.
Yeah, I think you have to, you know, I think what social folks have to do and actually you have to explain to marketing counterparts and just different cross-functional partners in your business is just the behavior of social, how people are behaving. We're all on social all the time, but I think you're not really analyzing it. So as social leaders, here's what we're seeing. Here's how people are responding to things. And so storytelling of, you know, today in 2026 looks very different than it did in 2005. Right? It looks very different than it did back in the day. Just saying your claims using a famous face is not enough. Sometimes you don't have to say a word, right? Sometimes it's really just evoking an emotion and that's enough. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really what people need to understand is and really analyze is just how people are behaving. This is what we're seeing people respond to, or this is the natural behavior that people have on social, which, by the way, continues to evolve as the platforms evolve. So, you know, that's the other thing is, again, what worked yesterday may not work tomorrow. And where is your consumer actively at? Where can you actually win? I think where a lot of brands make a mistake is trying to do everything when you just don't have literally the ability to do it. So it's kind of the idea of fewer, bigger, better versus trying to do it all.
How do you make the decision about where to spend? And, you know, what are some of the things that you think about?
What's going to yield the biggest ROI for you, right? Where do you have the largest footprint, and where can you make the biggest impact for your brand? So I think looking at it through that lens is how you make that decision. And again, like where is your customer most active? You know, I've worked on a brand before that, like, you know, TikTok shop is really buzzy, and you know, they set up a TikTok shop. We want to be where all the action is. Meanwhile, their target audience is still very much so shopping on .coms and or in store. They're like not even interested in TikTok shop, and the TikTok shop was just failing. So it's like, you know, you have to make choices strategically, not based on what's buzzy, but again, what's going to yield you the strongest ROI.
Fascinating. Because we've seen this rise of kind of the nano and micro creator.
Yeah.
And, you know, those seem to have such cultural relevance. Sometimes those break out, but that flies a little bit in the face of finding where your biggest ROI is. How do you navigate that tension?
Well, I think one, there are certain audiences who really care about influencers. There are certain audiences that don't, right?
Okay.
So when you're going after a younger demographic, right, like they really care about and are being influenced by what's happening with creators and on TikTok and Instagram, et cetera. When I think about sometimes an older demographic, right? Like if I think about marketing something to my dad, he doesn't necessarily always care about like what an influencer says. So I think it really depends on your target audience. And when it comes to authenticity, I think, listen, we've seen the research where peer-to-peer recommendations just land more, just land better with consumers than hearing from a brand. They just trust them more. So that's why, you know, having a really strong advocacy strategy is really important because you want these influencers and eventually consumers to really kind of tell your story for you. And again, that's where that community piece also comes into play.
This question just popped into my head. You know, we're seeing brands use Gen AI, and some of the narrative around Gen AI is that there's a lack of authenticity a little bit perceived by the consumer for that.
Yeah.
In that case, then I would argue that, you know, maybe the influencer channel becomes even more important to be in conjunction to, you know, to how brands approach AI. I don't know. Have you thought about that much, or what are your, where's your mind at?
Yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, it's interesting. We don't know exactly where it's going to go, but, you know, I think that's one of the things that people are trying to already battling with is like, what's real, what's not real, how authentic something is, and losing that human touch. So I think that, you know, I don't know that you're going to be able to get community, if you will, from AI that you will get from, you know, actual, maybe you will, I don't know, but that you get from actual humans right now. So I think, you know, we just have to see how it evolves. But I think the role of, it's a little bit of partially the brand and creators is really helping to keep that human connection with community, right? And keep it authentic.
In the influencer life cycle, if you will, and where would you say we are in the influencer ecosystem of marketing life cycle? Or is it like early stages, middle game, or is the influencer world maturing? I kind of am inclined to think we're still, it's still going to continue to grow, right?
I think it's still going to continue to grow. I see think pieces every other week that say it's dead. And I think some people just want it to go away. I think it's going to continue to evolve. But again, I don't think that peer-to-peer trust is going away anytime soon. So I think it's going to continue to evolve. And I think the younger generations, you know, when you hear young kids say what they want to be when they grow up, a lot of them say like YouTubers and TikTokers, it's not going anywhere. These kids want it. That's what they
want to do. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I love that. All right, let's pivot a little bit. Let's talk about beauty a little bit. Okay. I think when we first chat, you used the term beauty is crazy and sexy at the same time.
Yeah.
Why do you think beauty is such a cultural accelerator?
Because I think globally, you know, there's just something about aesthetics that people gravitate towards, right? It's a part of our world from the time we're younger until we get older. And the older you get, the more it's kind of like, it's glamorized, right? You know, I think about here in the US, it's totally glamorous. There's movies around it. And then there's like modeling. And then, you know, with now social, we're also connected where we see beauty trends around the world. And we're just so intrigued by it. So it's, there's something about it that just feels very glamorous and intriguing and fun. It's a serious business, but I think in the grand scheme of life, it's something that feels light and creative and fun.
That's a great answer. Thank you. Mm-hmm. What does beauty understand about the community that other industries don't?
Ooh, I mean, honestly, I think beauty understands the power of community to drive the bottom line.
Love that.
And I think that successful brands, they love to talk, but our community asked for this and we answered. And then this is the result we saw. And so when you have that, that's how you're starting to build that loyal following that maybe, you know, 20, 30 years ago happened from a commercial. They're seeing that happening now online, right? In social, where they're doing social listening and they're talking to their community. You're having that two-way conversation and you're hearing from creators and consumers how much they love a certain brand, right? So I think, you know, beauty understands purpose-driven marketing, building community, and how it allows you to have a deep relationship with the consumer and keep them loyal. And they do it really well.
Now, this question, again, just pops into my head. If you were advising a non-beauty brand, what would you borrow from how beauty brands market themselves?
Guess it depends on the brand. because I think it depends on the brand, right? Because I think there are brands, like I think there's some food brands that are phenomenal, you know, that have really loyal following and strong community, and who are, like, if I think about like Chipotle and like Dr. Pepper, so I'm obsessed with Dr. Pepper and what they've done recently. I think it just all depends on the brand. I think I think a lot of these brands have community. I think if you're a brand, if you're a non-beauty brand and you just are purely speaking to consumers about your product and what it does, I think what I would encourage them to do is think about why you need to matter to this person.
Well, you're so tied into culture. What's a signal that you kind of pay attention to, or any or a metric that you might pay attention to that others might not, or might not pay enough attention to?
I don't know if I pay attention to, if there's a specific metric for me with culture. I think, I think what I pay attention to is, I mean, for me, it's really commentary, right? It's really, what are people talking about? What's getting the most reactions from people, positive or negative? So it's, for me, it's what's driving conversation, and what's and how is it affecting behavior, right? And not just what people are buying, but what they are, like how they're like living.
I love that. Well, and you're right, because, you know, so many people pay attention to likes and or ROAS on any given ad, but, you know, you can really move the needle with something that, or teases the right emotion in your community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, you can, if you look at, like, sales isn't going to tell you like why that's culturally relevant. It's going to tell you that they're doing something to be relevant. So I think you have to look at behavior and look at what people are saying, and then how they're like living and moving to really understand what's driving culture. Cause I think, you know, I see a lot of that in I see it outside of beauty. I think about like fashion and food and drink. Like, it's so interesting to me how like all of these sparkling water and sparkling soda brands have become so, like, it's a way of life. It's become culture.
Yes.
And then you're hearing now younger generations are drinking a lot less than, you know, older generations. Why is that? So how is that going to affect certain purchases and how they're living their lives? It's more like the behavior of people that I think I look at, and what's happening and what they're talking about versus like a specific metric.
All right. Let's talk about you. You've led legacy brands and some more kind of higher growth ones. How has your leadership style evolved over the years?
Oh, it's interesting. I think it definitely, my leadership style has become much more kind of, I take like a dual approach in that I have to lead my team, but I also have to serve almost as a leader for my cross-functional partners. So it's really leading the social and integrated pieces of the business, the execution with my team, but also leading that, you know, alongside of or for even, you know, with cross-functional partners, because we can't work in silos, right? So it's no longer, I'm just responsible for this and I'll check in with you when I'm done. We have to really partner together. And sometimes I have to lead that charge. So collaboration has become such a huge part of what I do in terms of leadership.
All right, let's change this gear a little bit. You shared with me that you lived in Senegal for a while.
Yeah.
And you married into a Senegalese family.
Mm-hmm.
How's that shaped your view of pop culture in the U.S. and your approach to your work?
Oh, man, it was such a different way of living. It's much slower. You could take your time. I was able to really see, I was so inspired while I lived there by just like the colors and how beautiful things were, but how it was not overly engineered. It was more organic and natural. And so that kind of speaks to, like, when I think about work, like authenticity, just being real and having a beautiful aesthetic, but not too overly engineered. And so just being as authentic as you can be and allowing that and resonating with people in a real way, just like kind of not trying too hard. I was really inspired by that and take that with me as I approach my work.
That's a great answer. You started the podcast by saying that you're a mom first.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What has motherhood taught you about resilience or leadership?
I have such a strong perspective on, you know, what matters and not sweating the small stuff. So I have a 7-year-old son and he is on the autism spectrum. And so it's a journey that no one else in my family has ever gone on as it relates to me as a leader, allowing your teams to prioritize their family and being able to like work and, you know, make time for your family is critically important. And I think also it's just, you know, things can get some, you know, sometimes it can be like fast paced and intense at work, but like, it just gives me perspective. Like at the end of the day, we're just selling lipstick or whatever it might be.
Yes.
So being a mom just gives me perspective on like when we should actually really freak out and when we should probably just take a deep breath. We'll get through this.
Over the course of the last few years, there's been a little bit of a migration away from the importance of culture and the way that you interact with your employees. But, you know, one of the phrases I use so frequently is people don't remember what you say. They just remember how you made them feel.
Yeah.
When you can make your employees feel valued.
Yeah.
They will go walk through fire for you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think that's important to me with the people I work with and the teams I manage. It's just the impression you leave. I always try to be really fair and understanding and be human. Like you want to be a strong leader. You want to make sure that you are, you know, commanding respect and holding a high standard, but also you're a person, they're a person. Like you never know what somebody is going through. So you have to extend grace and just be understanding. You know, at the end of the day, we are working towards one mission for the organization. So let's work through it together. But if someone is having challenges, like just be supportive. Sometimes people need a little understanding and I offer that. There's nothing wrong with being a leader that's kind. That's just how I am as a person.
When you step away from marketing outside of your son, what is this, your son's name again?
Ibra.
When you step away from marketing outside of Ibra, what grounds you?
Well, what grounds me is really my faith, and my motto is just gratitude, you know, living a life of gratitude. I always want to, I was thinking about this yesterday, like live my life where I'm in a full embrace with my blessings, like just never forgetting that I am abundantly blessed, even when things are not going exactly how I want them to go, just remembering that how grateful I am for everything that I have. That keeps me grounded.
Amen. I love that. All right, let's go visionary. Couple more questions here. 5 years from now, what do you think social first is going to look like in the marketing world?
Oh my God. It's going to be, AI is going to be insane. I can't even imagine, but I think everyone's going to be using AI and or pushed out by it. Might be controversial to say. And I think what can get people pushed out is not just because AI is just, it's going to like quote unquote take your job, but I think everyone's not embracing it and trying to fully understand it, I think. And so I think if you're slow to adapt, you might find yourself on the outskirts. Mm-hmm. So I think technology is really going to be driving our execution approach to strategy, and it's going to shift how we're our execution of social, and it's going to shift how we think about and build our social strategies.
Well, that's as good a theory as I've heard about what it
will look like. We'll see.
All right, I've got one more question for you, Nikita. If somebody worked for you for a year, what would you hope they would say about the experience?
I hope they would say that they enjoyed working with me. I would hope that they say that they learned something and that it was also somewhat fun because I enjoy social and I try to tell people to like social influencer, like this is the fun stuff. Don't forget to like enjoy it, you know? So that's what I hope they would say.
I love that. Well, I want to say thank you very much for taking the time to join us on the podcast. It's been really great talking to you. What a great interview. Is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you wanted to share or that might be new?
Nothing that you haven't asked me. I would just say to anyone listening, if you're like new to social or want to get into social, just be really, really passionate about it. It's a great space to be in. Know the business, be smart with your craft, be a collaborator, and don't forget to have fun with it. It's a lot of fun.
I love the have fun part.
Yeah.
So if somebody wants to connect with you or compare notes, what's the best way to reach you?
I'm on LinkedIn, so you can find me, Nikita Ye, and you can, you know, message me or DM me. And I'm also really active on Instagram. So my Instagram handle is at Nikita Chanel. So you can DM me and I'm there too. And yeah, best way to reach me.
Amazing. Well, thank you again for joining us on Directly Speaking. I so appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was wonderful. Thank you.
And we hope you enjoyed the content today, everybody, and enjoyed the opportunity to get to know Nikita along with us. And we hope to have you again soon. Until then, keep selling, everybody. Have a great day.